If this was staged and the voice is in fact local, it is strange that in the 23 years this has been going on, none of those voices has come forward and identified themselves to expose the sham, which they would also have had to keep up for the same 23 years. None of the group of personal friends around Edwin W., nor his wife, ever recognized any of these voices as alter personalities of Edwin or even characterizations within his capability. He affects no other characters besides his own natural personality. A sham on this kind of scale to fool so many for so long seems to be an impossibility. Broadcasting equipment is expensive and nobody involved had money of that kind, and they would only be fooling themselves, as nothing was done with this before. "Never before," said Kashendo, "have I felt so helpless. I am anxious for the safety of my family and friends on Calder's. They are in the front line and I am relatively safe here on Melka. Now that we have tasted the bitterness of war, we shall appreciate peace even more than we did before. Let us hope that our Corinthian division will soon succeed. But now, let us return to more pleasant things. I am seated here in the observation dome and look in the direction of your sun. There is a wonderful sight. I see a lonely traveler of the heavens gowned in a gorgeous cloak of silver trailing 45 million miles behind it. A wanderer in space. It is a comet which we can see from this way station. Comet Bennett, it is quite a sight. It reminds me of your ancient Egypt. Way back in history, a comet appeared in their skies, but this comet was one of our starships, one of the early ones to land on your Earth. I must tell you more about those starships, for there are some fascinating records in our archives, but for the moment, this relayed radio transmission must end. We wish you well from Melka, until next time." Next time came under most unusual circumstances, 20 minutes after splashdown of the ill-fated Apollo 13. Man was making his first attempts to reach beyond his solar system. Sputnik, the first satellite and the first spaceman, had already been sent aloft. Neil Armstrong had made the first giant leap for mankind. The whole world had witnessed every step of man's voyage to the moon. Project Apollo was already well into its stride. Then came the 13th mission of this kind. The launch at 13:13 hours went off without a hitch, but 56 hours later there was an explosion in the service module making it totally ineffective. The date was April 17, 1970. The astronauts were completely dependent on the lunar module, which was designed for an operational life of 48 hours. The shortest return trajectory would take 63 hours and the problem of getting home was serious. The explosions deprived the command module of electricity, water and oxygen and their batteries were run down. Twice during the epic home run, it almost became necessary to transfer the astronauts to an astral craft which had come to the rescue. But the combined efforts and ingenuity of the astronauts and the hard-working ground control won the day. At the splashdown, the ship had barely enough power to open the three main descent parachutes as one of its three batteries was dead. It was no wonder that President Nixon rearranged those famous Churchillian words, "Never have so few owed so much to so many." Just 20 minutes after splashdown, Edwin was alerted on his radio receiver by Zibo of the Cetonian 6th Patrol. "Greetings. No doubt you have heard the good news that the three astronauts have safely landed in the recovery area. The Confederation, my personnel and myself are happy to hear that they are safe. For the past 3 Earth days, we have been keeping a close watch over the stricken American spacecraft. Melka informed us of the plight of your three astronauts. My superiors instructed me to respond immediately and give aid to them if necessary. When we reached their position, we contacted the commander of the American craft by radio. At first he would not acknowledge our transmission, so we positioned our astral craft alongside their craft. We could see the Americans observing us through their observation window. One of them had some kind of a photographic instrument and we presumed they were making a record of our presence. But soon after they had recovered from their surprise, the astronauts made radio contact with our astral craft. Their first words were, "We come in peace. Then they identified themselves and the command pilot of the American spacecraft said, "Are you real live Martians? And are you as green as they say?" One, my friends, we all laughed at his joke. Before the Americans contacted us, they had advised their main base on Earth of our presence. We have made a recording of this transmission and I would like you to listen to them describing our astral craft when they first observed us. The recording, which Zibo now played back to Edwin in his radio transmission to Pintown, Natal, resembled earlier ones made by previous Apollo astronauts. Note, this is not the first case of UFO contact with our space vehicles recorded. However, the W. German UFO Nachrichten for the 15th of July 1969 reported UFO contact with Apollo 8, the last one lasting 11 minutes, during which time the capsule left its course. Pedro Romaniak of Argentina wrote in his book Distel Cosmos Nos Vigilant that the Russian Voskhod I encountered a UFO in orbit. The whole world had witnessed and listened to every step of man's voyage to the moon, but this message was obviously only meant for the ears of their control center at Houston. It is describing the strange object that has just come into view outside the capsule. The words of the three astronauts, each in turn in quick succession and sometimes overlapping, came across with excitement and an occasional touch of earthy jargon. BR5. High five. Holy son of a gun. Straight down the middle of the road. I have it. Outlandish. 42 degrees. Big. Its size is like the biggest freighter helicopter. What is it? I can't believe it. Amazing. Holy catfish. 42 degrees. Big. It is from high ahead. Its falling speed amounts to 3500, coming down at about 99 feet per second. You can't hold him. I hope you can hear him. Right down the middle. Yes, continued Zibo, as the command pilot and his crew said, they could not believe what their own eyes were seeing. We must have looked a strange sight hovering there next to their disabled craft. I should imagine an astral craft must look strange to anyone who sees it for the first time. Later, after that first radio contact with the American astronauts, we became acquainted with them and soon we were friends. Twice during their return journey, we thought that we would have to transfer them to our ship as further problems occurred. But they were able to rectify these, and for the rest of the homeward journey we remained close to them. After they had safely entered Earth's atmosphere, we followed for a short way and wished our newfound friends farewell, and while we are here, we took this opportunity to make this transmission as we had a message for you from the commander of Melka. He asked me to inform you, continued Zibo, that Melka will contact you again as soon as it is possible to get through. At the moment they have a problem as they have to rely on a Byraean astral craft to relay their transmission, but as soon as such a craft is within range, they will contact you. Unfortunately, I must now end this direct transmission to you, as we have to resume our patrol duties. Farewell. It so happened that 2 days later, on April 19, 1970, there was a radio transmission from Melka. Cashendo said he was glad to hear from Zibo that the astronauts landed safely. He also said that they had been monitoring all recent manned Apollo moon missions at the request of one of Earth's governments. When your astronauts left for your moon, we followed their progress and on receipt of their distress signals, we contacted Calder's advising them of the plight of the occupants of the badly damaged craft. I was then informed by my superiors to send a message to the nearest astral craft, and Commander Zibo of the Cetonian Division happened to be in close proximity at the time. He responded immediately, and after he had located the damaged craft he accompanied them around your moon and then back to Earth. He finally left them, after they had safely entered your atmosphere. At regular intervals during the return journey, we on Melka were kept informed by Zibo regarding their progress. All of us in the center were relieved to hear they eventually made a safe landing on Earth. Cashendo then surprised the listeners by saying that Melka had been honored by the visit of a special guest. He said that the guest was seated right before him while his Corinthian craft was being serviced below in the astral hangar area. It was the first time that a Corinthian craft had visited Melka. Kashando said that their guest was none other than Commander Voldar of the 2nd Coldesian Astral Patrol Division. Voldar was apparently on a special mission, for he and 15 other commanders were on their way to Byron. But before handing over to Voldar, he added that Edwin must have missed hearing from his old friend, George. This was certainly true. Since the outbreak of hostilities on Calder's, Edwin had been anxiously awaiting news of his old friend. "Greetings, my friends. This is Voldar." Edwin immediately recognized his voice, which brought back a flood of memories. "It is wonderful to be able to speak to you once again by radio transmission. I often think of you, Ed, your wife Elizabeth, and those in your group whom I got to know so well. I therefore welcome this opportunity to re-establish the bond that there is between us. As you know, there has been a great change in our lives since Calder's was attacked by Goldonia. If you visited my planet now, you would notice a tremendous change in the people. Their sense of freedom, their zest for living, seems to have left them. No one on Calder's knows when the next missile attack will come. What a devastating effect these attacks are having on us. The people cringe each time they see a fleet of craft leaving, for they associate this with more violence. I hope that our journey to Byron will change the situation. We are on a special mission there to collect 15 new Corinthian astral craft and are going so that they can instruct us in how to operate them. Each of the pilots I have on board will bring one of these latest models back to Calder's. With this division we hope to break through the Goldonian defenses and bring an early end to their aggression. While exploring deep regions of space, the Corinthian division found the direction from which the Galdonian craft were coming, for they encountered concentrations of missiles there. This has halted their progress temporarily. We hope that with the combined strength of this new division, we will be able to breach their defenses. I personally think that this may be the turning point of the war. Voldar continued by giving more details of the new Corinthian craft, describing it as the ultimate in offensive weapons which they have devised. It is a craft of immense proportions with large numbers of sun ray disintegrators strategically placed, giving it an awesome capacity for annihilation. A veritable battlecruiser incorporating the last word in space translocation capability. It is strange, continued Voldar, to find that the Goldonians are very different from us in appearance. Even more puzzling is their mental makeup, for they appear to have an insatiable appetite for killing and causing pain and anguish to others. They may have found our peaceful cold as an easy target in the past, but I hope soon we shall change the ideas of the people we call the Outer Worlds. In closing, Voldar said that he was asked to pass on best wishes from Clive Een, Commander Weora, Commander Kill and also Commander Mankton, all rising rapidly in their new military defense. They all promised to make radio contact again when it would be possible. Then, as if addressing Edwin personally, he said, "I often think of those carefree times when we used to do our patrols over your planet Earth, and all those transmissions we used to make to you and the other bases. It gave us much pleasure. And now, you and Elizabeth have a baby daughter? Ah yes, my friend Edwin, I can't get used to the idea that you are a father now. When I last saw you we were both single. Now we both have responsibilities. We are both older and I hope, wiser too. Do you remember the many hours we spent together? Keep up your spirits, Ed, for one day we shall surely meet again. But now I must end, to all my friends on the planet Earth. May God bless you." This is Voldar, now handing over to Commander Kashando. Kashando said, "That was Commander Voldar. I wish you could see him seated before me,